very seriously.
And spirituality is something that was, I think, I had a thirst for it. I had a thirst for all the questions of who am I, why am I here, what's the meaning of life? These are things that at some point somebody's, it's going to hit you and you have to ask those questions. And I think I really felt the Baha'i faith made a lot of sense.
Join me, Joan Bakewell, tomorrow night at 11 o'clock to hear Omid Jalili discuss belief here on BBC Radio 3.
Well, in an hour and a half tonight, I'll be taking you through the night, setting off with Eino Juhani Rautavaara's wonderfully atmospheric Cantus Arcticus, perhaps his best-known piece, mixing orchestra with the sounds of real Arctic birds. After it, you'll be able to hear performances of Saint-Saëns' first cello concerto and Lully's suite Le Bourgeois Gentilhomme. This is BBC Radio 3, 90-93 FM, on digital radio and online. It's just after 11:30, time for Jazz Lineup with Julian Joseph.
Hello from Oxford, the city of dreaming spires, a phrase coined by poet Matthew Arnold in reference to the architecture of the university buildings. You join me with the famous Old Tom Clock at the front gate of Christ Church College, when, from the 21st to the 24th of April, Oxford will vibrate with jazz from the UK. And for the next 90 minutes, I'll be talking to some of the top British musicians that'll be making that jazz. The Town Hall is just a short walk from here, up St. Aldgate, where Soweto Kinch will be performing on Friday the 22nd of April. While I walk there, let's hear from Soweto's current album, The New Emancipation. This is A People With No Past. So here we are in the wonderfully ornate Oxford Town Hall, and performing here on Friday the 22nd of April will be Soweto Kinch. Welcome to Jazz Lineup Soweto.
Good to see you.
It's always good to see you.
Indeed.
Well, look, you're back here in Oxford, which is like, is it your second hometown or your third hometown? It's your alma mater anyway.
Yeah, certainly. It's home from home. And it is like a trip down memory lane, just walking past all the colleges and remembering, being able to appreciate without any of the stresses of finals and tutorials coming up. It's really great.
And so what was it like here studying history? You were at Hartford College, weren't you?
I was at Hartford College, and I had a really great time here, really. I got to pursue my academic interests, but also it opened me up to a whole world of jazz that actually I didn't expect to have, you know, quite so much access to. Other kindred spirits who had huge record collections, jam sessions that were happening here, and it really did open me up to other ways of playing and other ways of listening to music.
The New Emancipation, that's your latest recording, an impressive recording. Now, jazz, R&B, rap, hip-hop, these aren't just buzzwords to you. These are all things that you go deeply into, and certainly you mix the gravel and the gravy.
Sure, for me, mixing idioms and genres is all subservient to the message, to whatever theme, whatever story it is I'm trying to tell. Mm-hmm. And it's implicit in the title. I wanted to explore freedom,
right.
What that meant in its myriad forms in 2011.
Yeah.
You know, the blues as a form and jazz as a form underpin most of the songs on the album, but also hip-hop as a form of expression, soul, singing, you know, modern forms of expression as well. And I felt that that story needed to be told in a variety of ways.
Well, let's look at the way that you're utilizing the horns in the sound of the record, like your arranging technique and the things that you're drawing from is deep blues expression and very subtle uses of color and texture that do underpin this great sense of history that involves not only a very American point of view of how Africa has influenced Western society, but I was listening to you, and listening to the record, and thinking to myself, is this a guy from Birmingham via Wandsworth, or is this a guy from Texas? Where are you drawing this kind of inspiration? Because
it reminds me of some of the things Mingus was dealing with.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously, because your story can bring some light to what it is you're dealing with.
Actually, this historical point is somewhere between worlds that I wanted to explore. I'm actually very interested in African music expression from the 18th century as well.
Right.
But I was really interested, I got drawn to Delius's compositions as well in the 19th century.
Right.
They have touches of blues sound. He's a 19th century British composer who went to orange plantations in Florida and heard protogenic forms of the blues, if you like. But obviously, Joplin, Ellington, there was actually a lot of Booker Little that I really, really like his horn arranging style for four horns. And for me, it's just sounds that I've been drawn to over time. And I think that is, you know, largely African-American in expression. But the whole process of emceeing and speaking of, that's strongly actually Jamaican in origin.
Yes.
You know, and I wanted to really just absorb the whole, embrace the whole gamut of African expression, African diasporic expression, to tell this story. I think we're at a very interesting point in history collectively, you know, right around the world, that we have to rethink what emancipation meant then and what it means now. We have a black president, but yet we feel that personal liberties and freedoms have been more curtailed than ever, perhaps, by the behaviours of banks and of big corporations. Sometimes we feel more fettered than ever. So I wanted to express or explore this very unique moment in our collective histories.
And tell us about the instrumentalists, the players, the drummer, the bass player, the guitarist in particular.
Yeah, I've had a lot of fun with Femi Tomowo, who's the guitarist I've been working with now for nigh on a decade, really. Mm-hmm.
So many years.
We're so old school. 10 years. Wow, we're so old. Yeah. But we met when we were teenagers, and you know, I think that musical telepathy that you can only get comes from working together over years. So he understands my musical vision probably better than anyone else. The bass player Carl Rashid Abel I've been working with recently, and he's really promising young, incredible bass player, plays electric and upright really well. On tour, I'm playing with Graham Godfrey, who's another drummer.
Yeah.
And I think as a quartet, we're really growing, and I'm really looking forward to bringing that ensemble through to Oxford. On the record, I was, you know, lucky enough to get great guests from overseas. The drummer is Justin Brown on the record. He's a phenomenal musician. Mm-hmm. Of course, Byron Wallen, who's, you know, one of the elder statesmen, a real influence to myself and the way he thinks, you know, a really encyclopedic way of playing the music and really random. Actually, he didn't have his plunger mute for the record. I don't know if he minds me saying this. Mm-hmm. We actually went out and bought an actual plunger for the record. Now that's improvisation in action right there. You know, Shabaka Hutchins, a young, incredible improviser on bass clarinet and tenor, and somebody who already is, you know, become a luminary voice in the British jazz scene. And Harry Brown, who's another long-time sparring partner of mine. We played in Jazz Jamaica together. So it felt like a collection of friends, really, being part of this record. And people who really understood the vision as well, with the singers and the musicians kind of understanding what the implications of these songs were. It wasn't just music, but actually there was a message behind the ordering of them and, you know, the presentation of them.
Well, a huge thank you to Soweto Kinch, and his concert will be here at Oxford Town Hall on Friday, the 22nd of April. Let's hear more from that wonderful album, The New Emancipation. This is Help. Saw how strangely she'd leave.
my sick of crashing down. Will tomorrow bring a change or just more of the same? God, I've gone the right way. Believe my time might stay. Seems like some unkind game. Help me along, please help me.
Who is Market Forces? Who gave him control of the cash? Handed over the motor to crash? Who gave him a rope and an axe and a profile of a sociopath?
Oh, split personality, schizoid tendencies, that remorseless lack of empathy. A volatile mind state, 1 minute it's tender and nice face, then in split second it's spit venom, bile and blind hate.
The sensational alto and music of Soweto Kinch from his current album The New Emancipation, featuring the vocals of Jason McDougal, and that was Help. Catch his concert at the Oxford Town Hall on April the 22nd. This is Jazz Lineup previewing the Oxford Jazz Festival. Well over 50 bands in just 4 days all over the city, running from April the 21st to the 24th. I've now travelled up to the Big Bang restaurant where they hold jazz on a Tuesday night. And incidentally, also in the city centre, there's a cafe called Cafe Tarifa. Deirdre Cartwright and Kathy Dyson will be performing at 6 p.m. on the 21st of April there, so the festival momentum is now gathering pace. And as festivals gather people and performers together for a period of time, they don't happen without exceptional planning, not to mention financial backing, and here to give us an insight into this is one of the festival directors for the Oxford Jazz Festival, Maxwell Mason.
Good to see you.
It's been running for how long now?
Our third year. We started in 2009, really not knowing what any of the three of us were doing, I suppose, in terms of running a festival and building it. But luckily, we all come from very different stables. So we've got Alyssa is our web and our look and our brand and our design. Paul is the music man who knows who we're hiring in, what the venues are like, what the acoustics are like. And I regret I'm pretty much just the mouth.
Well, I know we're familiar with Paul because we've spoken to Paul many times before. How would you say that the style of the festival has changed now in those 3 or 4 years, Paul?
Well, I think the festival is really gaining momentum. And the first year, we obviously had a very restricted budget. In fact, we have a restricted budget now as well. I think we're just generating an awful lot more interest from great musicians, both local and national and international.
Max, what does a jazz festival do for a city and a scene?
We have a very clear sort of aim, I suppose, that Oxford is a very busy town during term time, and yet during Easter, all of those students obviously go, and we have a completely new slice of people that both we want in the town and that visit anyway.
Yeah.
So our aim is to act as a massive economic stimulus and put really incredible jazz or inspired jazz into venues that you wouldn't have normally seen. So it's both a way of using the venues of Oxford in a way that they probably haven't been used before, and also bringing in a whole new package of people and money to a city that really needs it over the long Easter weekend.
Alyssa, you're responsible for the look, the web. What are your challenges in terms of promoting this jazz festival?
I want people to think that jazz is an approachable genre, that there are a lot of people out there that don't think that they like jazz. And so with the look and feel, we try to be much more inclusive. We want it to not look like a stuffy genre. We want it to look like a friendly genre. And so the look and feel is really incorporating Oxford with fun and excitement and just trying to reach the masses and let them know that there is something for everybody.
Do you think it's that stuffiness, and what other things do you think it is that's turning people off it or not drawing people into it?
I don't think that people understand what jazz is. They think they hear the word jazz and they don't. They think that it maybe it's too experimental, or it's noise, or it's loud, or they don't really know what it is. And that's why we put music clips on our website, so that people can listen to the clips before they buy tickets, and they can learn what style of jazz that they like.
Max was talking, you were talking about the student population here, and do you get a lot of those guys coming to the gigs and seeing what's going on?
We do, yeah. There's a very strong Oxford jazz presence within the student societies. And in fact, there's a new sort of underground club night every late Wednesday night, which is packed with students. And it's really good to see that jazz is reaching a much younger and much sort of sharper demographic than you've seen previously in Oxford. And despite the fact that we hold it over Easter when most of the students are away, we're fortunate this year that Easter's late, so a lot of them will be coming back anyway for the Easter weekend.
Well, I know you run a jazz competition, Jazz Factor. And we've got the winners now. Tell us a little bit about Jazz Factor, what that's about, and what you're trying to do, Paul.
Well, I think this really follows on from what Alyssa was saying. We're trying to appeal to a very broad demographic. We want to reach young people as well as those who are already converted to jazz. Mm-hmm. And we thought, what a great idea to get you know, people of school age involved, mm-hmm. who possibly are already playing jazz, or maybe not, but could be persuaded to have a go at improvisation and playing some music. And it started off fairly slowly in the first year. We only had 6 bands, but this year we had 20. We had more applications than that. We could only fit in 20.
And who were the winners of Jazz Factor 2011?
Well, they didn't actually have a name when we first started. So they've called themselves the Oxford Jazz Collective. Oxfordshire Jazz Collective, I'm sorry.
Well, we've got all of them here at the moment, so I'm going to get them to say a quick hello. So, hi, Oxfordshire Jazz Collective.
Hello.
Hello.
We've got two spokespersons from the band, Jake Mortar, who's the drummer. Hi, Jake.
Hey.
And we've got David Hepworth, who's the trumpeter.
All right.
Hi, David.
Now, how exciting has being a part of Jazz Factor been for you here in Oxford?
Very exciting. I mean, just the whole competition, like the feel of the whole competition, I was just like, it got my heart going, and I got excited, like when the judges were just stood up there, and I was like, you know the feeling. Is it going to be me? Are they gonna say Oxford Youth Jazz Collective? Just the feeling, getting the cup and stuff. It was just really uplifting as well. And like knowing we've got to do this really big gig, and I'm just really excited about it.
Thanks, Jake. Well, David, you and all the guys, Jake and everyone, you're all incredibly young guys. You're around, what, 18 years old?
Yeah,
17, 18?
All sixth forms, all 17, 18.
Right. And so is jazz very high on your priority of music loves?
I think since, for me personally, quite an early age, I was into jazz. Mm-hmm. I mean, both my brothers are musicians and they both went off on jazz trails or around the UK and things.
How did the Oxfordshire Jazz Collective get born? Was it, I know that you all go together and play in the big band, which is run by the Oxfordshire County Music Service.
Yeah, we all, it's like a sort of separated off of that, and there's just the six of us this year.
We did 7:30 till 9:30 on Tuesday nights. We do a big band, and in the big band there's not really much chance to do improv and show off, so like us guys come an hour before and we just together just run just out of the real book and things like that, and it's just all, yeah, just like
getting like jazz standards in our head and things. It's really enjoyable.
Who encourages you and leads the big band?
Chuck Lloyd is like our, I don't know, I suppose we could call him our manager sort of thing.
Manager and mentor.
Yeah, he's been definitely probably the biggest influence to me in my musical life so far.
Well, Jake Mortar and David Hepworth, Alyssa Robinson, Paul Jeffries, and Maxwell Mason, thank you so much for speaking with us, and we'll see you at the festival.
Yeah,
thank
great
you.
Pleasure.
Thank
see you there.
You.
Performing here on Sunday the 24th of April is one of the UK's national treasures, Norma Winston. We hear her now in concert from the Big Band Britannia concert we broadcast a few weeks ago. Norma is with Stan Saltzman conducting the band and singing Gentle Peace, written by Kenny Wheeler.
Oh.
Norma Winston singing Gentle Peace, written by Kenny Wheeler, with Stan Saltzman conducting the band, taken from a recording made last year by Jazz Lineup at the Big Band Britannia concert at London's Barbican. The last time Jazz Lineup met up with vibraphonist Roger Beaujolais was at Southport's Jazz on a Winter's Weekend Festival around 3 years ago. He's going to be in Oxford again from the opening day on the 21st of April, this time at the Jacqueline Dupre Music Room, just on the outskirts of the city. Earlier last week, I caught up with Roger and asked him about that gig.
The gig on the 21st of April, that is with my quartet, my regular quartet, Robin Asplund on piano, Simon Thorpe on bass, and Winston Clifford on drums. And we've got some new tunes, actually, that we're working on, some original compositions of mine, which we haven't played before. And so we're trying to do something slightly different for this gig, which is, always trying to do something slightly different anyway and move it on a bit. And so, yeah, it seems like a nice gig to do it.
Well, I mean, the piece that we're going to hear from is from your album, which is called Blue Reflections, which is... Tell us a little bit about that record.
The first couple of quintet albums that I did were just albums that I felt like doing, mm-hmm. and because there were tunes that I'd written and everything. And then the third one, I decided to do as a kind of ballads album called right. Sentimental. And then on this one, I thought I wanted to do something quite bluesy, because that's a big part of what I do, and it's a major part of my influences in jazz and in music generally, actually, because I didn't come to jazz until I was a bit older. And so before that, I saw John Lee Hooker in 1967 and things. Wow. So I was into blues, and so this is a reflection of that influence on me, really.
Well, not only people like John Lee Hooker, but certainly you get into Hank Mobley from one of his classic records, Soul Station, the title track.
Absolutely,
it's something you don't often hear that tune played too much.
No. Oh, I mean, I try and do that with tunes, because there are so many tunes that are common, really, in a way that you do hear people, and I think that I like to do those, but I think on a record it's nice to do something where you're doing something that is slightly unusual, or, I mean, it's not that unusual, I mean, but it's a beautiful tune, and I'm a big fan of Hank Mobley.
So, in terms of what you're doing with the group at the festival, where is it that you're moving the band onto? Because here it's very much the blues, and we're going to hear, when we finished a down-home track of yours called T-Bone Steak.
How brilliant.
But where is it that you're moving the band to now in terms of material?
I think that, I can't stop the blues influences in me, and so that's always going to be a part of it. And I think that the next album that I'm thinking of, it's going to be more boppy, actually. There's still elements of blues, but I'm just changing things around. And when I write, I never know what's going to come up. I'm not writing to a formula or anything, and I'm sure you know what I'm talking about.
I do, yeah.
You know, you start in something, at the end of it you've got something, and then quite a lot of things, not all the things I write are possible to do with the quartet,
mm-hmm.
because they're just not appropriate. But I'm working on things specifically for that lineup at the moment, and so I think it's going to be, I want to do something quite fast and quite immediate and quite punchy.
One more question, Roger, before we finish, is that I was talking to some 17 and 18-year-olds from one of the Oxfordshire bands that won the Jazz Factor.
Uh-huh.
And there's a great enthusiasm for jazz amongst these young players that attend a big band and have expanded out into this ensemble of their own. And as an educator and as someone who teaches at Trinity, do you find that the music is attracting young people with this enthusiasm and this real burning and passion for jazz?
I do, and I think it's one of the contradictions in the world, actually, in that if you do what I do, teach at Trinity or one of the other colleges, you meet loads of incredibly enthusiastic young people that are so passionate about what they do, also very talented. And you'd, if you walk around in that world, you'd think everybody loves jazz and it's just great. But then you meet people outside it and they don't see that side of it at all. And I think it's a great encouragement for the future, the fact that there are so many young people who are interested in the music and want to make something fresh and new. And I think as well, you know, when it comes down to it, it must be a wonderful opportunity for them because, as we know, jazz is one of the most challenging musics that you can possibly make. And to actually start that young on that journey to try and find yourself and find your own identity within it is a great thing, I think.
Vibraphonist Roger Beaujolais, thank you so much for speaking to us.
Been a pleasure.
vibraphonist Roger Beaujolais and T-Bone's Tale from the album Blue Reflections. And Roger is at the Jacqueline Dupre Music Room on the festival's opening day of April the 21st. This is Julian Joseph previewing the Oxford Jazz Festival. Radio 3's Alan Shipton will be recording his Jazz Library programme at the North Wall Arts Centre on Saturday the 23rd of April with British tenor saxophone legend Bobby Wellens at 2:30 in the afternoon. And Bobby performs his own gig at the same venue that night at 7:30 p.m. Well, I've moved just a short walk to the pub The Wheat Sheaf off the High Street, home to the Spin Jazz Club. And holding the fort here for at least 12 years is guitarist Pete Oxley. I'm pleased to say that both Pete and I have survived the narrow staircase. Hello, Pete.
Hello, Julian.
The audience here are always ready and anticipating something great happening on the stage.
Yeah, I think the audience here is something that we're very proud of, actually, that we've developed over the 12 years that we've been playing here. And right from the very first gig, we had across a whole style of people that would come here. And to this day, we might have a third of the people be students, another third will be people in their 20s and 30s, and another third will be older people with serious professional jobs. So, and some of them even are jazz fans.
But the energy here is particularly vibrant, and the musicians in particular have to work to make it happen, because the staircase leading up here is quite treacherous, right?
Yes, of course you've got to work hard. I mean, we only expect our musicians to give 100% here, and that starts from walking up the staircase. Mm. We're also very proud of the programming that we have put across in the 12 years that we've been playing here. And that, of course, is coupled with the success we've had in the audience, in as much as right from the beginning, Mark Doffman and I, and Mark is the guy I run the club with, by the way, we set out to program musicians that would not only be great players, but also wouldn't just be playing to their feet in an intellectual way or to themselves on the stage. They were musicians that we felt very strongly would communicate. So, for example, our first gig was with John Etheridge, and there's nobody better, as far as I'm aware, that can put across a very exciting vibe. It's not so much that they're entertainers, but they're musicians that can communicate at the same time.
Over the 12-year history of the club, and it runs every week?
Yes, every Thursday.
Every Thursday. Who are the people that you have got to come here and perform and inspire your audience?
That's a lot of gigs. I was just thinking on my way up the staircase that the 100th gig that we put on, which was a sort of celebratory gig, was a long time ago now. So It's now hundreds of gigs that we've put on. But we have people that we like to get back. And I've already mentioned John Etheridge. As it happens, he's playing here next week. Mark Lockhart comes from time to time. Roger Beaujolais, Tim Whitehead, who's playing in the Jazz Festival, actually, which will be another treat. These are all musicians that come and play with the house band, which is Mark, Raf Mizraki on bass, and myself on guitar. And then we have, every fourth week, loosely speaking, we have a band that's on tour that we don't, obviously we're not involved in playing with. And that for us is equally as exciting as being on the stage playing, because we get to sit down after all the hard work getting up the staircase and then setting up the stage. We get to sit and listen to a great gig in a great atmosphere.
Well, I know from personal experience how much I've enjoyed playing here. You were recently nominated for Venue of the Year. In fact, I think it's quite a regular thing that happens to you guys for the Parliamentary Jazz Awards. What was that a big thrill for you?
It was, yes. In fact, we've been nominated, or shortlisted, I should say, four times consecutively. Right. And on the third time, we were so convinced that we'd get it, we'd organised the BBC to come down here and film the great celebratory gig. And I wrote a piece called Got It, right, being that ambitious, ready to play for the BBC, and we didn't get it. But it did actually result in a piece that I subsequently wrote called Missed.
I know you're taking part in the jazz jams. I've got Theo Jackson here with me. How important are the jazz jams for you?
Well, actually, this is going to be a fun thing for us to do, mm-hmm. Because it's the first time that we will be doing it, and that's the Spin Trio. When Theo asked me to do it, I suggested bringing the other guys down, because we're obviously a tight unit, because the three of us, Mark, Raph and myself, have been hosting these gigs here and playing as the house band for 12 years. So it would be nice to have something to offer to the festival.
Well, we just came from the Big Bang restaurant, and I know Theo's right here. Hi, Theo.
Hi, Jimmy.
At the Big Bang restaurant, that's where you're holding these jazz jams. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, they've been running for the last, well, since the festival started, actually, downstairs in the cellar of the Big Bang, and they have now become something of a, oh, I like to think a bit of a highlight of the festival. Yeah. People can really come together and have a really good fun time after all the day's gigs are finished, and we tend to find there's such an eclectic mix of people down there. We encourage young musicians to get involved. The likes of the Jazz Factor winners who you met earlier,
right.
Get up and get to perform on stage with the likes of the Spin Trio. It's one thing that we're changing this year is having a house band in each night of very good class, top class professional players to come and give some stability to the sessions, and so that we can encourage young musicians to get involved and hopefully encourage some of the headline acts to come and get involved as well.
Thanks, Theo Jackson.
Thank you.
Pete, your new band is called Eclectica.
Yes.
And how long has that been together, and what is it about?
Well, it's been together since 2007, and I think because of the diverse backgrounds of all the players, well, that was partly why it became known as Eclectica right from the off. This album that has just been pressed and is about to be released in the coming months, Lizzie Ball, the violinist and the singer, she studied classically. I think from the moment she left university, she became involved with all sorts of different musics. She plays with the Colombian Trio. She's fronted a lot of pop stuff. So she's got very solid time. She sings beautifully. She currently leads Nigel Kennedy's Orchestra of Life. And so she's the kind of person that can genuinely play anything. And then we have Bernard Gregor Smith, who was the cellist in the Lindsay String Quartet from day one up till the last day of the 40th year of that quartet's existence. So Bernard brings a phenomenal wealth of musical experience and a great sound to the band. And then we have Nick Meyer on guitar, who's a fantastic guitarist, so I'm sure you know. And Nick has, although he's Swiss, he's married to a Turkish lady, and he has taken a lot of influence from Turkish music. So that's now come into the sound of the band as well. And then there's me, I write what I hear and sort of fuse all the lot together.
Well, Pete, it's been great speaking to you. Thank you so much for bringing us to the club so we could experience the vibe. And we're going to hear some Eclectica. Thank you.
Thank you.
guitarist Pete Oxley's new band Eclectica, and that was the title track, Flight of Fancy. Lizzie Ball was on violin, Bernard Gregor Smith was on cello, Nicholas Meyer was also on guitar. A strong Latin and South American vibe on that track. That was the title track, Flight of Fancy. And Pete is the force behind, and sometimes in front, of the Spin Jazz Club in Oxford. So get down there during the Jazz Festival, where Tim Whitehead will be performing on April the 21st. Pianist Kit Down's career has been blossoming beautifully over the last few years. Recently nominated for a Mercury Award, he's been part of Empirical, duets with fellow pianist Tom Corley, and is a member of the organ trio Troika. He now follows up his debut with a strong new album called Quiet Tiger. It's out now on the Basho label, and he plays the Randolph Hotel with his sextet on Sunday the 24th of April. He's currently on tour, and last week I managed to catch up with him while he was in Manchester. Before we hear that interview, let's hear a track from his current album, Quiet Tiger. This is Tambourine.
The characterful, sometimes quirky, but always engaging pianist Kit Downs with Tambourine from his new release on Basho. And he continues to express his love of cats with the title for this album called Quiet Tiger. Callum Gawley is on the bass and James Madron on drums, with special guests James Alsop on reeds and Adrian Dennefeld on cello. I hope I said that right, because Kit Downs and the guys are in Manchester. How are you guys? All right.
Good, thanks. Yes.
Yeah, good, thanks.
Now, Kit, Quiet Tiger. I know you like cats. Why is it called Quiet Tiger?
I was checking another David Attenborough documentary mm-hmm. about the tiger forest in the Boreal, in the sort of Siberia kind of way.
Right.
And there was this very nice little bit where they showed a very empty forest and just this one little Siberian tiger just trotting about on his own. And I liked the idea of something very powerful and strong being in such a sort of desolate and quiet, magical kind of place. So with that kind of idea, I wrote that tune, and then that ended up being the sort of title track.
Right, which gets recapitulated at the end of the album.
Yeah.
So what for you is the objective of the album?
Well, just to document what we're doing at that sort of certain time. And I think we did have a clear idea that we wanted it to be more of an album per se rather than a sort of live recording. Mm-hmm. Because the last album was very, very live, and there was no production on it at all, really. It was just almost like a demo.
Right.
Whereas this, we sort of wanted it to have a bit more sort of flow as a whole album, and getting the cello and the bass clarinet overdubbing things on as well, just sort of enrich the sound slightly.
Your way of dealing with form is quite different. It's much looser. You go into sort of free areas much more than many people in your generation do tend to do. This is something that's quite important in your conception.
Well, it's something we've sort of ended up developing over a sort of period of time, just as we gradually listen to more and more of that kind of music that has more open forms. And I think as well, naturally, the people we like are people like Keith Jarrett, especially that early American quartet, Paul Bley, Ornette Coleman, and Charlie Hayden, Paul Motion. These are sort of the people that we really enjoy listening to, especially recently, and that sort of informed the way we play together. And I think as well that the longer you play with a group of people, the more you want to challenge the sort of normal roles of the way, especially a piano trio, which is such a conventional format. You really want to challenge the way those roles are. So I guess you guys are sort of always trying to find new ways to play your roles in the band, and it's always changing, I guess.
Yeah, definitely. I think playing free is just another sort of useful tool, really, to mixing up, a set and mixing up the album. You know, a little glimpse of a free thing here and there really makes a, you know, can really, really just sort of really contrast against really heavily written things. You know, it's sort of.
Yeah, it's another colour, I guess.
Yeah, definitely.
Was that you, Callum?
It was, yes.
Now, Callum, tell me, how would you define playing free?
In the trio, I think of it as more playing, more open than free, you know.
Obviously, free is such a nebulous term that it's totally relevant to what band you're doing that in, and there are so many different types of playing free within that sort of era. You know, there's free jazz from the 60s, there's sort of noise music, there's kind of incredibly minimal, you know, European, all sorts of different types of that music. So I think for us it's just a very personal thing, and it's influenced by a sort of set of so-called free musicians more than maybe the jazz musicians.
I think the improvising is always informed, or it starts out that way, is informed by the composition.
Yeah.
Like I was talking to someone else about Kit's tunes the other day, and saying that on some of them the written material is very minimal, and then our freeing it up is just taking the minimal composition and expanding it, and then taking parts of it away and playing in around it and sort of messing around with it effectively, and
often just rearranging bits as well. And the improvisation doesn't have to be in just making up melodic lines. It can be changing, you know, the structure of a piece, changing the order that things come in, or using tiny bits of information from the tune and putting them in different places, or changing the aesthetic of the timbre of it, you know, things like that.
Or even just one person in the trio changing, you know, me and Cannon can still be doing the same thing, and you can be doing something completely different.
That's quite liberating for all of you, isn't it, really?
Yeah, it's good. And we've managed, we've allowed that to happen over a period of time of, you know, 6 years that we've been playing. It didn't start out like that. It started out much more conventional piano trio, and you know, that was fine. That was the music that we were sort of listening to then. But I think gradually, as we sort of listen to more and more music, it becomes informed by more things.
We started this segment out with you guys playing tambourine on Quiet Tiger. What would you choose for us to play you going out?
Or maybe Skip James.
Well, I chose Skip James myself.
Well, I'd go with Skip James then.
And I'd say, tell me about your relationship with the blues, and particularly why you called this Skip James.
I think every jazz musician has a relationship with the blues.
Should have.
Yeah, if they acknowledge it or not. I think it's such a huge part of that, of the music that we play, and I think a lot of the way we sound is very consciously rooted in sort of even kind of pre-early jazz into blues music.
Well, thank you, Kit. Thank you, Downs. Thank you, Callum Gawley, and thank you, James Madron.
Thank you very much.
It's been good speaking to you all, and I know that the gig in Oxford at the festival is going to be great, so
thank you.
I advise everyone to go out there. Take care, guys.
See you. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Kit Downs' interpretation of the blues through the composition Skip James from his latest album out on Basho, Quiet Tiger. That's it for this week. I hope you've enjoyed this short trip around Oxford, home to no less than 38 different colleges. I can tell you that next week I'll give you a concert from Manchester-based band Southbound, and we'll still be in preview mood when we look at this year's Cheltenham Jazz Festival. Monday night's Jazz on 3 sees Jez Nelson present the up-and-coming Scottish trio Newt, featuring German saxophonist Silky Eberhard. As old Tom strikes us out, till next week, from me, Julian Joseph, bye-bye.
Welcome to BBC Radio 3 Through the Night with me, Jonathan Swain. A recent concert from Lugano in Switzerland to set us off tonight. One with Antonella Manacorda conducting the Italian-Swiss Orchestra. Later on in the Saint-Saëns first cello concerto with cellist Daniel Müller-Schott. And the Richard Strauss Le Bourgeois Gentilhomme music. Their first piece is by the Finnish composer Rautavaara, who's in his 80s and these days very much the nature poet and mystic. This is Rautavaara's Cantus Arcticus, a piece mixing orchestra with actual recordings of Arctic birds. Three linked sections here, the first called Swamp, then Melancholy, and finally Migrations of the Swans. Cantus Arcticus, written in 1972 by the Finnish composer Eino Johanni Rautavaara, ending there with a section called Migrations of the Swans, the Arctic Birds recorded on location, and the players were the Orchestra della Svizzera Italiana, conducted by Antonella Manacorda, this concert from Lugano in September 2010. And they're joined now by cellist Daniel Müller-Schott for this performance of the Saint-Saëns' first cello concerto, a piece written in 1872 and in one continuous movement. Thank you.